You guys know I'm crazy about Audible because it offers an incredible selection of audiobooks across every genre. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, including the latest bestsellers and new releases. Audible really is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment, with female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks. Audible has you covered for any type of excitement that you're looking for. In fact, right now I'm listening to The Second Husband by Kate White. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. That's audible.com/realitylife or text realitylife to 500-500. With four daughters and two on a dance team, I can tell you we go through a lot of mascara in my house. But I'm crazy about L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara, which catches every lash from corner to corner for maximum volume. If you're looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank, this is yours. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. I've been using it for about 2 weeks now, and I feel like my eye has completely opened up, and the girls are crazy about it too. They've got a tapered brush to catch every lash, one of the best mascara wands that I've ever used. And like I said, this luxe appearance of this gold package, you got to get it. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. L'Oreal Paris new Panorama Mascara. You're going to love it.
The amazing Kate Casey.
Welcome back to another episode of Reality Life with Kate Casey. Hope that you've had a great week and you noticed I now have three episodes. So this week, just yesterday, I posted my must-watch episode. That will come to you every Tuesday and give you a great start to the week with lots of options of what to watch. It's going to be a great guide for you. This weekend, I watched Sex and the City, the reboot. You know it's on HBO Max. I have to tell you, I think it's terrible. And I know I'm not alone because I put it on my Instagram story and I could not believe how many people were like, I got to tell you something. I agree. It's a 10-episode return of HBO's iconic New York City Friends set roughly a decade after the last feature film. It follows Carrie, Miranda, and Charlotte, but not Samantha, entering the next chapter of their lives. Carrie's married to Mr. Big. Miranda's about to start her graduate studies and Charlotte's raising her children. Now, remember Carrie was this free-spirited sex columnist? Well, now she's prude, which makes zero sense. She's co-hosting a podcast with someone who makes her sound totally out of touch, and it's pretty anti-podcast, which also really annoyed me. Miranda's son is having sex next door. That makes no sense. She doesn't want him to smoke weed, but she's totally okay with him having sex next door to her. She has totally seemed out of touch too as she goes into graduate studies, which seems totally unlikely if you watch the original Sex and the City. And Charlotte is even more uptight than usual. And here's what it makes me feel like. It makes me feel like these women would never have been friends in the first place. Maybe they were Carrie's friends, but all four of them, including Samantha, in what world would they all hang out all the time? Maybe they would hang out like once a year at a holiday party, but they don't really seem, the older they get, to seem like they have all that much in common. Now, they also have Miranda turning to alcohol because she can't wrap her brain around parenting and graduate studies and Steve's losing his hearing. And I just thought, I don't know, like, is that the way we want to portray Miranda? Anyway, here's the worst part of it. At the end of the episode in episode one, I'm not spoiling it because I even knew the ending before I even watched it because it's everywhere. They have one of the characters dying right after he gets off the Peloton. This is what's so horrible is that last year on November 20th, my friend Deborah's husband, Jeremy, died right after he got off the Peloton. So imagine my friend Deborah texts me. She's like, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I just watched Sex and the City. This is the worst thing ever. And I hadn't watched it yet. And can you imagine that happened to you and you're watching this television show as an escape and that's what you have to watch? So I got to say, not very happy about it. I'm not happy about the way the first episode ended. It made no sense. And I think that they should have done better for women in their 50s. It's absurd to make them feel so elderly. This episode, I'm so excited about. Two things. Number one, I interviewed Stephanie McNeil from The Rise and Fall of LuLaRoe, which is a new documentary on Discovery Plus. It basically pulls the curtain back on LuLaRoe, which is a multi-level marketing company, and features interviews with a bunch of people that were involved with the company, and it explores the psychological techniques used by multi-level marketers and how the company harnessed the full power of social media to make so many people come on board and sell their buttery leggings with the most hideous prints. It's fascinating. And Stephanie is a great reporter, and I was so excited to talk to her. And then I also was made to watch the 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 Days premiere. You guys, it's only one episode in. It's plenty of time for you to jump in. If you've never even watched the show before, you're fine. Because Chris Farah, who does a YouTube every week of the episodes, she texts me and she's like, you've got to watch it. And I said, fine, but you and I have to talk about it on the show. And it's 30 minutes of me basically silent laughing because the show is ridiculous. She's hilarious. And I'm so confident that all of you will watch it over the holidays and have a great, great laugh. So this is a Super Dynamite episode with Chris and with Stephanie. Again, I'm so sorry if I'm offending anybody, but I just thought Sex and the City, the movie, was terrible. If you agree with me, will you please send me a note? Please send me a note, because I feel like there are many of us that are out there feeling the same way. And again, episode on Friday, so three episodes this week. But here we go with this episode. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way that you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach, like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, and they pass the savings on to us. So I just got a 100% organic cotton tiered maxi skirt in red and a chiffon pleated midi skirt in soft pink. Now I'm going to wear both of them with either a white scoop t-shirt or a black tank top. In fact, wait, should we all get the same outfit and meet for drinks? Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/KKC for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/KKC to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/KKC. This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. If you're looking for new style inspiration, Saks.com is the place to go. Saks.com is making it easy for me to shop for the spring with their selection of chic clothes and accessories. Right now, I'm looking at Saks.com so I can find my new going out vibe. I'm looking for a breezy Zimmerman dress for an evening cocktail party. And for my upcoming conference in Los Angeles, I'm looking at bright Chloe blazers because I'm pushing myself to wear more orange and pink. Saks.com will inspire you to shop for everything on your agenda. So find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com. Stephanie McNeil is one of my favorite reporters. And she wrote an in-depth investigation on LuLaRoe on February 22nd of 2020. And I think I read it six times. It was so good. The article's title is Millennial Women Made LuLaRoe Billions, Then They Paid the Price. So through a partnership with BuzzFeed Studios, there's this fantastic in-depth investigation called The Rise and Fall of LuLaRoe. And I know other people are just as obsessed as I am with this story. This one is a revealing new documentary that pulls the curtain back on the multi-level marketing company and features interviews with retailers, warehouse workers, designers, and others whose lives were profoundly impacted by the organization. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. That's so nice of you.
Oh, I like every time you put something out, I get so excited about it because I know how hard you work. Everything you write is so heavily researched. And you always have such a great sense of humor of things too. And the other thing I always like about you is I think that a lot of reporters are sometimes they can be mean about those that get sucked into a scheme, and you're always very kind to those that are victims. So I really always appreciate that. And this story is no different. Talk to me a little bit about why LuLaRoe was so successful making the dream of working from home, setting your own hours, supporting your own family by running your own business so much of a reality?
I think that the reason it was so successful is what you just said, which is that dream. And I think it helped that they had a really good origin story and a really good spokesperson in Deanne, who's the founder of LuLaRoe, because she, you know, really marketed herself and, you know, is in reality someone that a lot of women who joined felt like they could look up to because she, you know, she was a mom. She had many children. She had, you know, a bunch of biological children. And then she adopted some children from abroad. And then, you know, she was a stepmother. So I think, you know, she had a lot of things that she was juggling and she was able to create this business. And, you know, no matter what you say about LuLaRoe, you know, she did start this business and that was inspiring for a lot of people. And her story, you know, she talked about how she had all these little kids and she decided to start selling clothes wholesale and she drove around and she worked really hard selling, you know, clothing at these different parties. You know, she really sold it as a very American, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, mm-hmm. Starting from nothing to growing into something big story that, you know, I'm sure you can relate. I can relate. We all heard these kind of stories growing up as children, you know, it's very much a part of the American ethos. So for her to be someone who these women could look up to not only have this dream, but have a very concrete example in her of like, hey, this is a dream that you can really believe, but also here's someone who made it happen, I think was very impactful for a lot of people.
And also, I think she played into the social media vanity part. She's so bubbly. She always had a lot of jewelry on. Her makeup was always perfect. And she portrayed herself as somebody who was always happy. And if you're at home with kids, I know this to be true, that sometimes it's like just to be in the muck of the day, like the same thing all the time, to see someone so bubbly, it's aspirational. Like, oh, I want to be around someone like that and have the kind of life that she seems to have.
Deanne really has endless energy. You know, I followed her on Instagram for a really long time. And, you know, she is a very interesting person and a very interesting woman. You know, there's no doubt about that. She does. She's very bubbly. She's a very good spokesperson for the brand. You know, I think a lot of times when people talk about LuLaRoe, you know, some cynical people can say, you know, oh, like this was such a disaster. And, you know, in many ways people have said it was, but, you know, there was something there that really made it just explode. And I think, you know, she's a very natural marketer. You only have to watch, you know, I would say like 15 minutes of any of her promotional materials or Instagram stories to see what drew people to her, especially people, like I said, who could relate with her story, her demographic, you know, and wanted to do it for themselves.
So let's talk about how LuLaRoe was able to seduce thousands of recruits.
You know, I think that it started very organically. It was very word of mouth. Deanne has said in a couple of interviews or implied that she never even really thought about making it a business. She was that, you know, had other people selling it as well, as opposed to just herself selling it. And the first retailers were women who had gone to what she called her dress parties. And then later she called them maxi skirt parties, where she brought basically prototypes of LuLaRoe skirts, and just invited women to come and shop. And that was something that Deanne had been doing for years. She, again, like I said, had been selling dresses on wholesale for years through this same business model where she would go get them and then she would invite all the ladies over, you know, have some bites, drinks, whatever. They would come by and shop and that was kind of her whole thing. And she would do it all over the West. She would go to Utah, California, where she lived. And so it all happened very organically. And I think Deanne was also tapped into a very large network. You know, she grew up Mormon and she has a ton of siblings and they have a ton of relatives as well. So, you know, it just spread very organically. You know, a woman would go to the party and see all these happy ladies selling, making money, having fun. And, you know, it didn't feel like work, I think, at first. It just felt like, hey, like, why not just invite all of your girlfriends over for a little gathering have all this clothing out. If they buy it, great, you make some money, but it didn't feel like work, you know, it felt like a social gathering. And I think that was really powerful. And eventually it just spread literally all over the country. And that's, I think, when it, you know, went from primarily being a word of mouth in-person thing to being a more social media driven thing, where women would do these lives on Facebook. They would be in these Facebook groups. And if you've ever been on Facebook or been in a Facebook group, you know, people love those kind of communities and love, you know, collecting things and stuff like that. So I think that's where it really took off.
Also, you know, it has to be said that if you even are invited to some sort of MLM gathering, there's pressure on you just as somebody who has attended a party to purchase something. So I can imagine there's also pressure on joining and becoming part of the team where you're, or when you're around everybody. I mean, I end up buying dumb stuff sometimes just to get out of the party, right? So there are, might be people that are like, oh, I'll just sign up and, you know, maybe they'll leave me alone. The next thing they know, they're kind of stuck in something, right?
Oh, 100%. That would totally be me. Like, I'm very susceptible to peer pressure. Totally. And you know, what MLMs do is they're very insidious in the way that they market to people. And they, you know, ask their friends to recruit people that they know and trust, which is different than, you know, just trying to sell something to someone on the street. I don't know if you've had this experience, but I've gotten over the years, probably a dozen Facebook messages from people I went to high school with, people I knew, I didn't know, who are all like sending me these things. And, you know, if, you know, I like obviously knew that that was not something I wanted to do, but if you're someone who's maybe close friends with these women, you know, they're saying, you know, oh, look at all this stuff I have. LuLaRoe has this hashtag because of LuLaRoe. And women post all of these things where they're like, I was able to pay off my mortgage because of LuLaRoe. I saw one the other day that a woman said she was able to adopt her daughter because she raised from LuLaRoe. So, you know, really tugging at these heartstrings and, you know, seeing all your friends doing it. You want to do it too. That's just human nature.
Or they'll say, post a picture of like this extravagant gift and then go bananas over the person that sent it to them. Like, I'm so grateful that I know Deidre because without this, this wouldn't be possible. But Deidre actually works for the MLM. What are some of the psychological techniques that were used by the marketers of LuLaRoe?
I think just creating this sort of click mentality. And one thing that a lot of people who I've spoken with over the years who used to be in LuLaRoe have told me is it was just as much emotional as it was financial for them. You know, again, there are so many things that you can kind of get into on the internet, right? And I think a lot of women really, really got into LuLaRoe first as consumers. They really enjoyed buying the products. A lot of women collected the leggings, not even to wear, but just to have those rare colors and stuff. And so that's fun. That's a hobby. And then, you know, once you're in the company, you really feel like you're a part of something, right? So you have your girls that are with you in your upline and your downline, you're part of a team. We all talk and joke about, you know, once you hit your 30s, it's hard to make friends. It's hard, you know, it's hard to have a social life when you're a mom. And it's so, you know, you move to a new place. Maybe you're a military spouse, you know, all these reasons why, like, you know, it would be really compelling and powerful to be able to kind of join this community and then have a set of ready-made friends. And, you know, obviously the financial things as well, you know, you're staying at home with your kids. You can take your kids to the park. You don't have to send them to daycare, but you're making just as much money as you would, or maybe even more money than you ever could at a desk job or working in retail or something like that. So I think there's like a lot of things combined where, you know, LuLaRoe was not just a job. It was a job to a lot of people, but it was also a sense of ownership. You know, I own my own business. That's, there's pride in that. You know, the community of LuLaRoe, the friendships, just being a part of something. It's all very, very powerful.
They harnessed the full power of social media to onboard a massive pool of retailers. And they did that by doing what? Facebook Lives, the hashtagging. Was there anything else that they... Any clever tactics they use with social media to onboard retailers?
I think that MLMs in general now have been able to grow so large because of social media, because you can just reach so many more people than, I guess, like your average MLM back could when it was just like Tupperware parties or whatever.
Yeah.
LuLaRoe is very adept at using the internet. I would say not just social media, but the internet in general. You know, they were able to have people all over the country through, they would have weekly webinars where they would, you know, kind of like an all hands meeting where they would pump people up and, you know, do announcements and stuff like that. You know, posting things on their LuLaRoe pages, on their LuLaRoe Instagrams. I think like you mentioned, the biggest thing that really made this a social media MLM company was these live events where they would sell clothes via the Facebook Lives. But just creating these communities, Facebook groups, all this stuff, it was just, it's hard to know how much of it was planned and how much of it just grew organically, but it's really interesting when you see, you know, how much they were able to grow via social.
So some ended up risking their homes, their bank accounts, obviously their relationships with their close family and friends. And this was all an effort to be their own boss. Talk to me about the collapse going from the highest of high to where we are now.
Yeah. I would say LuLaRoe's best years were, I would say 2016, 2017. You know, they had thousands and thousands of retailers. They were really well known. You know, I think not on, you know, in like big cities like New York and LA, but, you know, in smaller areas, you know, suburbs, small towns, they were really, really well known. And then in 2017, a bunch of retailers got together and filed a class action lawsuit because they said their clothing, which was not inexpensive, you know, their leggings were about $20 to $25 a pair, which is not, you know, no. You get a pair of at TJ Maxx for $5. So, you know, it's like a little more high end than something you would expect, to rip the second time you wore it. So the first class action lawsuit was about the quality of the clothing from the customers. And ever since then, LuLaRoe has faced just a lot of legal drama. You know, there was a class action from former sellers who said that it was a pyramid scheme. They settled a lawsuit with the Attorney General of Washington earlier this year after they accused the company of being a pyramid scheme. They're still fighting their former supplier over a lawsuit that basically both sides are accusing the other side of being a scam. And it's very interesting. But, you know, it's interesting when we say the rise and fall of LuLaRoe because while LuLaRoe is definitely nowhere near its heyday, it surprises a lot of people, I think, that LuLaRoe is still running. You know, it made it through the worst so far of the pandemic, which kind of surprised me, to be completely honest. And, you know, it's still an operational company. You can still buy LuLaRoe. There's, I think we estimated about 17, 18,000 consultants that still exist.
Wow.
And, you know, I think there's still people buying in, you know, if they're able to keep this, this thing going. So LuLaRoe is definitely, there's still more LuLaRoe story to be told, which I think is an interesting component of this documentary. Just because, you know, we don't really know what's going to happen next.
What's your advice to someone who is reading through your article, they watch the superb documentary, and they're thinking about joining what may be perceived as an MLM?
I would advise people to do their research. You know, the FTC says something like, I think it's 99% of people who join an MLM don't make money.
Yeah.
And I think just being, you know, aware of the difference between reality and social media, because I think that's one thing that has really made MLMs a huge topic of conversation in my generation, just because they've really, obviously MLMs were always around, but they've really been able to have a foothold on, I would say, older millennials, Gen X and millennials in particular, because we've gone through so much turmoil in the stock market in 2008. And, you know, a lot of people are looking for a way to make money and have a business and have something that's theirs and can be solid. And then the advent of social media means that people can get recruited on all sides. You know, there's huge influencers who are selling MLM, and that's really easy to get sucked into. So I think like any business venture, doing your research and realizing that everything you see on socials is is set up so you believe it is one way and it might not be that way. If that makes sense.
Well, tell everybody where they can watch this really, really good documentary. And then I want you to tell everybody where they can find you, because I'm telling you, you guys have to follow her because she really has the greatest articles.
You are so kind. The documentary comes out on December 13th on Discovery Plus. You can find me on Instagram at Steph E. McNeil.
Whether you need to buy or sell, or you're just obsessed with looking at homes for sale, Redfin's got you covered. Redfin updates their listings every 2 minutes so you can see new homes first. And they give you personalized recommendations based on the homes that you like, so you can find the home that's just right for you, whether that's a cabin, a craftsman, or a castle. With the top-rated Redfin app, you can favorite homes, share listings with others, and schedule tours, and even on the same day, with a local Redfin agent who can help guide you through the whole home buying process. And if you're looking to sell, Redfin agents have the experience to get you the best price possible for your home. That's because they sell twice as many homes as other agents. With a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin's fees are half of what others often charge, which means you'll have more money to put towards what matters most to you, like your next home. In fact, last year, Redfin saved home sellers $127 million. No matter where you are in your real estate journey, Redfin can help. Download the Redfin app to get started today.
If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Chris, remember when you texted me last night? You said, are you going to watch the 90 Day Fiancé before the 90 Day Fiancé premiere? And I said no, and then you told me I should, and then I did.
Well, thank God you did, because I was like, it's Sunday night. What possibly could you do on a Sunday in the holiday season more important than brand new, not only 90 Day Fiancé, but Kate, like before the 90 days, which means basically everyone's new, everyone's fresh, except for Usman, which we'll talk about, which is crazy. Anyway, you know what I'm saying? There are no like Teamy Blend influencers yet. You know what I'm saying? They're all brand new babies.
I know that's important to me because I do feel like this show is ultimately like, if we were all to go to a bar and, you know, at that 2 o'clock mark, when you've had a lot to drink and you have the beer goggles on, you really are led to believe that the person across the bar from you is the greatest love of your life and you will have an incredible life together. But then the lights get turned on, and this show is when the lights get turned on. Am I right?
Yes, except that some people are still drunk, right? So even though, yeah, exactly. So we can see, honey, but some of them are very drunk and they can't see anything, no matter what dark, pitch black, is bright as day. They could be in Vegas, honey, they can't see. No, I, it's like that. Okay. It is that. Also this, what if there was just a rotating cast of like a Commedia dell'arte repertory cast of theater, right? There's an older white lady. There is kind of like a brown looking like Arab guy. There's like a Russian girl who shouldn't be doing it. You know, like there's the exact same characters, but every season we get a new repertory show, same characters, new storylines. It feels like everyone is the same and everyone's slightly different.
Very good point. Also,
okay, thank you.
Before we go into each couple, which are absolute train wrecks, I have a question for you. Why do they have every person that they interview who is in their orbit? So it's the brother and the sister-in-law or the mother and the father. Yeah. They have them stand together so close as if they were contestants on Dancing with the Stars.
Could you imagine just the production at all times for that show? Like someone who's going stand here, they're just like in, because it's always like, okay, two things are happening. If they're confessionals, I get you, Kate. But a lot of the times it'll be like them just standing outside on their porch after they met and talked about the fact that one, you know, one of them shouldn't go, you know, because they're being taken advantage of by someone who wants a green card. It's like the exact same conversations, right? Every year, every time. But yeah, it does feel like The cameraman is right in their face. They are on a porch. It's like a 3x3 cubic foot porch, honey. And I mean, like, they're doing what they got to do. And they make the show for $2, you know? I mean, how much money they're making on the show? Because think about even Bravo. Like, every year to get those housewives, they have to, like, pay them, like, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And they just have a rotating cast of bananas, whammas characters, and they pay them nothing.
Good point. Okay, well, let's talk about the couples this season, because you were right.
Always.
They are unbelievable. So let's start with talk to me about Gino.
Okay, he's a star of the show. Honey, Gino, okay, first of all, Gino, there's going to be another one. Okay, just so you know, obviously the premiere, as you watched, we didn't get to meet two of them, okay? And the two that we didn't meet, it's like one's name is Mike and one's name is Hamina. But you could already tell in the super teasers and the teasers that Mike and Hamina have a whole crazy situation. Mike is kind of like a Gino who's kind of like a Paul, who's kind of like a 401 Clary, which is why I talked, there was a guy named Larry from seasons and seasons ago. It's like a guy, but Paul was a specific, really great example of this. It's a dude who hasn't been touched by a woman in a very long time, honey. And he's also paranoid of life. And he's been coddled in such a way.
Right.
And, you know, some sort of, I mean, with so many of these casts of characters, like touches of mental, maybe. But however, he has, honey, he met, I mean, Jasmine, and he is completely in an abusive relationship with this woman. I mean, like, this woman, Jasmine, first of all, she has the hardest body. I mean, she is fit AF, honey. And she is like, she bought everything, you know, everything is bought and paid for, but also like everything on her. And also like, but she's working hard for it too. And she's obsessed with this Gino, honey. And Gino is not to be obsessed with. Gino, honey, reminds me of, this is so bad, like a real life Kathy character come to life. Like,
correct. Oh,
this is so sad. This is, yeah, like, someone who's single in the 90s and eating TV dinner after TV dinner. I mean, the TV dinners brought me back. Gino, every night, honey, has like 3 TV dinners, like appetizer, dessert. And it's just like, I'm obsessed with even the ritual of it. Like the tearing of the paper board, you know, putting that away, the ASMR of the plastic film getting peeled back. He puts it in the microwave, ding, ding, ding. He takes it out, but before 30 seconds, he has to restir, then put it back in. You know, it's his life. I mean, what do you think it is? Do you think it's Lean Cuisine? It's not Hungry Man.
No. It's not Lean Cuisine. That is a high calorie diet food. And here's the other thing is that the living room is immaculate, which I do appreciate because given his obsession with TV dinners, I would think that he would live like a hoarder, but he doesn't. He's got a nice place.
You know what? It's interesting. It looks like he's obsessed with to-go, with single-serve items that can be thrown away. He has like a lot of plastic bowls. There's maybe something about him that wants to like
OCD,
be dirty and throw it away. You know what I'm saying? And like not have any like traces left.
Like a criminal. And I did wonder at sometimes
like a criminal.
Two things. One, is he or has he ever been addicted to
killed
something?
Someone.
Well, that too.
Sure, sure.
Well, it was both of those. And the fact that he has a box full of Viagra, well, it's Viagra adjacent because we're not sure if that's real Viagra. That's probably from some place in the world, which is not operating under regulations sanctioned by the government. You know what I mean?
Not at all. It's either that box toggles between blue meth pills and blue Motrin. We don't know which one it is. He pops one every night, honey. He doesn't know. No, that's crazy. Yeah, he meets Jasmine. Jasmine is obsessed with him. Like, did you the scene where he orders, by the way, kill me right now, fish and chips. This is why, okay, first of all, I guess, get it both ways. I can't complain about his TV dinners and then realize when he finally orders to go for himself, he orders fish and chips with a, you know, cheesecake chaser, okay? Truly. And then he, like, is going to go pick it up from, you know, what looks like a very yummy pizza place. I don't understand why he didn't order pizza. Do you see that? It's called Mav. I was like, oh, honey, Mav. They call it the Mav. I don't know why. It's like, I'm so into when they go to restaurants. Because also, like, the Mav had to, like, know that they were going to get on this TV show for
this man
to come get fish and chips and cheesecake. Oh. And, yeah, Jasmine's like, take me, lift me. And so then he, like, FaceTimes her to pick up his food. And then he, like, horribly flirts with, I mean, he tries to flirt with the woman giving the food. The woman wants no part of it. He's like, what's your name again? She's like, Katie, you know, whatever. And Jasmine like blows her mind. She's like, she treats him like she, you know, like he's her little woman, honey. And he's just like, where are you going all the time or whatever. But it's like, he also sort of loves it because he, I feel like he thinks that he's being taken care of in that way. It's like the attention of Jasmine is exactly what it needs. In the same way, Memphis wants her attention. Oh my God, there's a lot of mental situations.
Well, let's go into that.
Kate, it's a deep dive. Okay. Memphis, my love, Memphis. Oh my God. The moments in which the show shows vulnerability and like talks about like very deep issues, like happens, he slaps you in the face because like you have to like deal with, you know, like how crazy it is to hear Gino like talk to Jasmine. Jasmine be like, we are going to like have sex, like don't lick feces, you know, and he's just like, that scene happens. And then we get, my God, a beautiful Memphis who's like fought her way through like many 12 different foster homes and has a conversation with her mom, which is like, mom, low key, I have a whole thing where I am literally just picking a guy just because every morning he will tell me good morning. And I can trust that because I had no security growing up. And her mom, honey, who like, God bless, is on God's green earth, but we don't know how much of her is left, is like, what happened? Nothing happened bad in your youth. And it's like, Jesus Christ, Memphis.
And also he doesn't speak English. So he's saying good morning, but in another language. So he could actually be saying something that's not good morning.
Yeah. He's saying sexy time too. So give him that. And I don't know about you. The last time my man said sexy time to me, honey, it's been a minute. So, I mean, I get it, Memphis, I get it. Wait, we talk about Memphis' lingerie? Kate,
please.
First of all, the lingerie was amazing. Did you see? Okay. She tried on this like one bridal lingerie and she has a banging body. Like, look at those titties. They like, I was so right. So real. And they're just like so bouncy. I love it. So, but one part of her lingerie, she tried on was this like negative space panel stuff. Like, are you into that?
No, I think it's, you know what it is? Panina Tornay destroyed the world of bridal because of that. It's like, I want to be sexy, but I want to be demure at the same time. So they do that stupid stuff. I don't agree with it. I don't like it. I don't appreciate it. I want it off TV for the rest of my life.
So what you're saying is if you had a Panina Tornay dress, would you do the lining inside or would you go no lining like a whore?
Well, I would put the lining in because I'm from Philadelphia and I wear a clothes that look like I'm going to a funeral all the time. However, there are many people on Say Yes to the Dress that take the lining out because they feel like the person that they're about to get married to likes the fact that they're slightly sexy time all the time.
Yeah, slightly. I mean, they're sexy time all the time, honey. No, but yeah, like, I always, okay, going back to like Memphis and Hamza, honey. It's always a little interesting to me, you know, when American women get hypersexual already with like super men from super religious countries. I don't know where Hamza lies, honey, on his religious scale. You know what I'm saying? I don't know how many like real titties he's getting in like, you know, for sexy time videos from like women around in this country or whatever. So like he's losing his mind. But Kate, did you see this? Because I didn't see this, but when I went live, people told me about it. People said that when Memphis was in the shower and Hamza was there, that they thought that he was recording it. Did you see that?
I did think he was a recording because it didn't seem right in the moment. And he's in a full tracksuit and he's sort of like it was like he was going, like giving her the nod, like, okay, like move over here. It seemed like he was more of a showrunner than a boyfriend in another part of the world awaiting her boobs to be displayed in the shower. There was something very sinister and very cunning about that. Yes.
And which brings me back to Gino, honey, in the super teaser. You watched the super teaser, right?
Yes.
For the whole season? Can you believe out of all of that, there's a moment where Gino, for some reason, and I understand for some reason, I'll tell you the exact reason, like showed Jasmine's news to all his friends, and I'll tell you exactly why, honey, he was so proud. Like he like, you know, I'm sure he told his uncle, you know, God bless. I'm sure, and I said this already, and this is really bad, but you don't have to say this to you because you know that Gino's dad died, right? Gino's dad died. And he just like was on that deathbed, honey. And then now he became friends, you know, closer with his uncle, right? But even on dad's deathbed, you know, he was like, dad, look who I'm talking to.
Oh,
and just showed
sure.
like Jasmine's. Oh, and then the dad was like, oh, my son, I'm going to go into the light, honey, but now I know you're okay. You know, God bless. And Jasmine finds out. Also, like, Jasmine's crazy. I mean, that woman's crazy. I mean, she's going to be like the villain of the season, which I can't wait for. She looks bananas.
And she got so much surgery and she hasn't even come to America yet. You know what I mean? Like that usually happens once you arrive and then you get some sort of deal with the local plastic surgeon and then you put it all over Instagram. That hasn't even happened yet.
Yeah, like she's Larissa before Larissa.
Correct.
So that's what you're saying. Yeah, I know what you were saying. But at the same time, what means, like, what happens when she gets here? But okay, so small note, and because this, like, killed me and I really, really hated it and I have to bring it up. And this is why I won't have a dog in the fight. And I'm going back to Gina and Gino and Jasmine, which is obviously the best characters so far. I don't have a dog in the fight. I wild care about which one over the other. And like, they can abuse each other and I don't care about it. And this is the reason why. Because Gino, in a conversation with his uncle, with his brother, the brother's like, oh, did you tell Jasmine, you know, like, you always wear hats because you're like balding or whatever. And he's like, oh, I totally told her that. But also our connection is so strong. Like, it's like, this is not about looks.
Right.
And I was like, well, of course you would think that, you dumb. I mean, yeah. No. Well, first of all, it is about looks, honey, because like when the producer was like, you know, like prodding you of what you saw on Jasmine, you're like, she feels so smart and she's, and the producer's like, anything else about her? And he's like, well, she's beautiful. And it's like, yeah. Okay. Well, yes. I mean, she's physically attractive and specifically for you. And you are right when you say that she's out of your league, but you recognize she's out of your league also because she's incredibly hot. So how dare you say your connection isn't about looks? And that is a part of my soul that I hate so much when men do that stuff. I'm like, okay, come on, please.
Exactly.
Are you kidding me? Also, yeah, you would wish it's not about the looks. You are ugly.
What do you think about the last couple that they highlighted in this episode, Alina and Caleb?
Oh my God. Well, first of all, can you believe there's another Alina? There's another Russian Alina, honey, who's like going off to Turkey. I mean, to like deal with some guy to get married because he can't get in and out of Russia right now because Russia is doing the work that the Alina parents can't do, which is keep their daughters inside Russia to not get married to like BS people. Obviously, I'm talking about Stephen with the V and Alina, the toe from last season or whatever. And that was crazy. And Stephen was a mess. I mean, we didn't even talk about Stephen. Stephen's a whole other different cast member, but you know what I'm talking about, right?
I do.
Oh my God. And he like came back in that tell all, honey. And he thought he was like a roast master at like Comedy Central roast. He came in swinging, honey. They were like, Steven, you're going to be like absolutely ripped apart. So if I were you, I would come in with a great offense. It's the best defense. And he came in with zingers, like Zingbot, like Big Brother. I mean, I don't have to tell you about that one. That one's crazy. But Alina the whole time was like, Lena, don't do it, Steven. Like, Steven's crazy. He wants a threesome. He's like pushing his Mormon beliefs on you. Like, you want coffee. Alina, you want wine. I know you do because you held a glass of wine the right way. I know you like wine, Alina. Don't do it. And then in this situation here, we have another Alina, and we don't know about Caleb. So this Alina I like a lot. First of all, Kate, do you know who Celine Luna is, who is a burlesque little person who's freaking fabulous and is in the Dita Von T show?
No, I don't, but tell me more.
Okay, she's amazing. Just look her up. So Celine Luna is her name. And you know, Dita Von T has like obviously a burlesque show and they do like whatever they want. You know, it's like a huge thing and they have like great stars. And this little person who's a comedian. So first of all, she's like a God bless, like fierce ass comedian who also just happens to be a little person, which is of course why I'm bringing her up at this moment, because Alina of course is like dipping her toe into burlesque. And I think she's going to like be amazing at it for two reasons. A, naturally, she's a really good model. Also naturally, she's also not such a great singer. You know what I'm saying? Oh my God, that band.
The band's terrible. And that one song, they have a lyric about Wi-Fi. I'm like, this is not the song to sing on your album, folks.
Oh, I wrote the lyrics down. Okay. So it's my P word got Wi-Fi. Okay. Here are some of the lyrics of her BFF band. That's the name of the band. And honey, those are not BFFs because they're not telling you what you should know, which is don't sing. Get in the burlesque. But anyway, let me just tell you. I want to feel a message logging in your body, feeling the vibration. Soon through my browser access, he's unrejected. Kill me. Who wrote this? Why did she write it?
Why? Why?
It's so bad. And it's like, when she was taking those burlesque, you know, pictures, and she had that beautiful pearl, you know, sort of like sexy thing on. I was like, this is your life, honey. And it's not singing. And you know what? Side note is, Kate, have you ever done any of the trifecta of like women feeling their sexual, like feminine powers, which is either burlesque, stripping classes, or belly dancing classes?
Are you surprised?
Yes.
By the answer of no, I have never.
Right.
No, that's not something I've ever done. Why should I do that?
Yeah, that's the second part. Yeah, so I knew that you would say no. And the second part is we should do that, obviously, right?
Okay, sure. Why not?
Which one would you do? If you had a belly dance, strip, or do a burlesque class?
I think I'm more inclined to do belly dancing, then the stripper pole, and then burlesque.
Okay. If you had a burlesque name.
Oh, God.
Like, what would your act be? Okay, I'll give you a moment to think about that, because Alina has a lot of options for act, because I've seen burlesque, honey. She can be like the, like in the beautiful, like champagne bubble, you know, arena, you know, like sometimes you're just like in like a beautiful, like bathtub, you know what I'm saying? And there's just, like bubbles everywhere. There's so many things she could do. She could be like one of those, oh, I always thought about this, this is what I want to do. My burlesque, whatever, like, you know, show stopping number, if you will, would be like me in a gilded cage, you know, like, and I'm in like, oh, I know. A little bit like, cause I had a fascination with that one Sesame Street movie from the 90s where like they kidnapped Big Bird and made him like sing in a cage and he was blue. Do you know what I'm talking about? You have kids.
I think I do. Go on.
I know you do. Thank you. Also, I guess you could kill a mockingbird, whatever. Like, I like the idea of me just like in a cage, but also sexy, but also like hidden, but also like singing for my life. And I think that Alina would do really good for that. Also, I don't know how I feel about Caleb.
Okay. This is what I don't like about Caleb. He's basically a stoner. He's like a lost soul who did a bunch of ayahuasca in Peru and came back, and now he's doing tarot card readings on, you know, phone calls. And I don't think that this is going to make him a lot of money. I'm concerned that he's at a point that it's like, I've known this girl for 13 years and she lives in Russia, and that's the only viable candidate to him to, for him to date. And so he's roped him into, he's roped her into this romance. And I think that she is such a kind-hearted person. She believes that there's a possibility here. And I think this is all going to go very wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, what do you say? Mom, this is my boyfriend, Caleb. He reads tarot cards.
Yeah, this is my boyfriend. He loves to run in the Arizona heat with long black jeans on amongst the cacti. Shirtless. I couldn't believe that. I mean, it's just, listen, all of the things, meditation's great. Like, Kate, I like meditation. I'm not going to lie. You know, I've burned some sage. I know how to rub. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've not given sage to friends of mine who moved into a new house. So all of this, like, hippy-dippy shit is fine with me. But at the same time, I would never like open a segment being like, this is me, Chris Farah, like into, like, no, that's not really it. And tarot, not ever. You want someone who's going to be into that stuff to have lived a life, who's like a wise soul, who's like done something or been through some ish. For you to be like 20 nothing and it's like, what are you doing? Just playing your little actor, which is also what I think. Kate, he has a very good voice, a very good speaking voice. And that rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah, because you're like, there are so many jobs that you could have been doing too. And this is the path that you chose. And there's something very sinister about that. It's like, let me take myself to the edge. Let me see what I can do to manipulate somebody. And it's exploitative and it's very disturbing. And she just seems like she could have her own show. And I hope that that happens. And I'm listening. I hope that TLC is listening to this, because they should absolutely follow her career as a burlesque dancer.
Yes, cabaret act. I mean, listen, I'm not saying she's a horrible singer. But like, she definitely is a horrible lyricist. You know what I'm saying? So like, maybe with some good music, she had like a good, like a accompaniment, like you could really turn her around. He has big arms, which makes me feel like, okay, he can lift that wheelchair. But at the same time, in a super teaser later on, she's like, they ask him like, or he says like, I didn't think that she'd be that small. And then I'm like, Caleb, you've been talking to Alina for like
13 years.
Yeah. Whatever it is, like, why didn't you know that? Also, I had to do math yesterday and it was a really bad thing because I was like, what did they talk on? What social media did they talk on? Because she just added people. This is, she's like, I have 15 years ago and is it 13? Because I keep saying 15 and you keep checking. Is it really 13? Or is it 15?
Well, what is it? MySpace? Like, what were they talking on?
Right. I know it's actually, here's the thing. I think it actually is Facebook, because Facebook was alive and that made me feel so old.
Wow.
Okay, so this sort of thing happens. So she adds people, right, 15 years ago to be like, practice her Russian. You know, Caleb has nothing happening when he's 15, honey. He didn't even get into stage yet. You know, he's just running. And he's just running among cacti, you know. So he says yes to the friend request and they talk. And then later on, right, like he goes on to the nameless, but I want to know, international dating website that they all are on. Is it I don't understand. Did we talk about that? What is it? Is it Tinder?
I'm not sure. I feel like we need to get to the bottom of it, because I feel like there's a lot of misrepresentation going on in that part of the world, to say the least. And someone needs to give me some answers.
Oh yeah. Is it Plenty of Fish? Remember that?
I don't know. Do they reach out to Russia?
I mean, they should have. You know, Russia has so many dating websites that are around, but... I just love the idea of like him finding her and then going back to his Facebook list and says, oh, I'm still friends with you, Alina. Is this you? And then her being like, yes. And then they just reconnect. I also, you know, Alina, and I love you so much. I really do love Alina. So I want the best for her, but I want to say this, Alina, like, I don't need you to be telling everyone that you need tall guys. You know what I'm saying? Cause I'm 5'8". Alina, you're cool. You know, like, you know, I don't know how tall Caleb is, but he's fine. Whatever he is, it's fine. But you don't need to, and you absolutely are not going to take anyone from me 5'8" or above. I'm fine. You're good. Alina, come on. Come on.
So here's my question. Don't you think that there's an opportunity for someone to create a business as an international dating consultant? And you go to them and say, I've met somebody in Tunisia and they are part therapist, part FBI agent, and they find out if this person's catfishing or not.
I mean, yes, but that's a brilliant idea. But now I'm thinking about it, like, isn't that kind of like what Catfish did, but like Catfish never went international?
Well, I'm saying this is either a television show, thank you very much, Discovery Channel, I just gave you another hit, or
yeah, I know, seriously,
it could be a very good consulting business. And I'm going to say you spend an hour with your first client, you charge about $4.99 an hour.
Oh, is that the, like, that's the initial fee, $4.99?
That's the initial fee.
Lower?
And then for each subsequent, you know, appointment, we're going to charge like, I don't know, $125 an hour.
Okay, that makes sense. I love that the initial fee is $500, but that someone will be like, well, it's not really $500. It's only $499. You know, I love when...
Always. It's just like a house on $1 million listing. So of these three people, you still think that Gino and Jasmine are the stars of the show?
Absolutely. But one more thing. We did talk about Kim and Usman, and I get why we like running out of room. How could we possibly talk about...
Let's touch on that. So long? Because I'm concerned about her. She, first of all, she's obsessed with Michael Jackson. That's a little...
Honey, she's loyal.
It's a little weird. She has tattoos. She has a fedora. She has figurines. And she's surprised that she makes bad decisions because she's so loyal. I'm like, sometimes you're loyal to the wrong people.
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, in my whole life and in your whole life, and you know, we've lived on this earth for a second, I've never had anyone ever refer to Michael Jackson in my ear, in my world, as Mikey Jackson or Mikey.
Never, not once. And I do remember interviewing the victims of Michael Jackson's abuse. So I can firmly say I've done quite a bit of research. I've never heard anybody else refer to that as well. So that is like a friend in her head. That's like a friend that they never spoke, but it's in her head.
Yeah. Does anyone recall you Katie Casey? Like, Katie.
Yes, my whole life until I became an adult. And then and it bothered me greatly because Katie Casey sounds disturbing. You know what? Maybe that should be my cabaret for last name.
Katie Casey.
Can we talk for a second about how on Sunday you're having an open house for the holidays? And do you want me to show up with my five kids dressed up in Christmas caroler costumes?
I would literally, yes. I need a wasay, like I need like a whole family, honey. Like Von Trapp got me singers. I'll put you in a corner. I'll put like, give me the littlest one, and I'll put like a little, like, you know, red nose on her, honey. Yes, I'll pay you all, like, you know, whatever, like Partridge Family, you know, some sort of money, you know. But yes, and also, can you do Ding Dong Merrily and High in some sort of like harmony?
Well, first of all, one of my kids does look like Gretel from The Sound of Music, so we could throw a little bit into that. I'm not kidding you; she's a dead ringer. But I do have high expectations because you were asking me if I knew somebody who could like pour some drinks. So I feel like this is a whole smorgasbord of holiday treats. Do you have a signature drink?
Yes, of course I do. First of all, like, yes, of course, bring your kids, but somehow also Uber to my house because like, I don't have to tell you, like you and your kids, like I won't get your kids drunk, but like I'll get you drunk. I'm going to have Martinelli's for the kids, but I have a signature, you know, sparkly, bubbly drink for the adults, you know, so it'll look like it'll have two. And then, so yeah, I'll be honest. So obviously it's going to either be champagne or Prosecco base. I would like to add, I know there's going to either be like some sort of cherry or cranberry compote or like some sort of like flavoring in some way. And then I know there's going to be some sort of garnish of a miniature candy cane. I'm going to tell you this right now. I've had a hard like year, like dealing with just like understanding. I think that like where I am coming in my life, I'm about to turn 40. And I have just put all of that mental disease into decorating this house for this Christmas open house. It looks crazy. You are going to walk into it's like Grey Gardens, how Grey Gardens then shows the mental state of those two women. This is like Grey Gardens, except that I went crazy and it's like Main Street Disneyland. Okay. You have to drive by my house tonight. Drive by my house before you come. You're going to die. Drive by my house.
Well, here are two things I want you to do. Number one is I want you to watch on Apple TV this documentary called 'Twas the Fight Before Christmas about a man who gets so angered by his new neighbors because they won't allow him to basically Clark Griswold his house, and he sues the HOA, and he's absolutely crazy. He probably was a January 6th rioter. I'm like pretty sure about it. So watch that. And then the second thing is, I'd like to do a little experiment at your party, and I don't know how you feel about this, but I think it's a good idea. Okay. Could we take your signature drink and put real sticks from outside in the drink to see if people will like use them to stir the drink and maybe even chew on, just to see how far we could go? It kind of reminds me of like in eighth grade, I had a party and I put dog bones in a bowl and Brian Cogliano ate them.
Wait, first of all, I know that you're like, would you do this? And the craziest thing is, kids, like, I was already going to do that. Is that crazy? I have all those rosemary outside, honey, bushes, and I was already going to just like cut a bunch of them. I was going to wash them off. I'm not going to have people like literally staring it with like, you know, like dirty, dirty rosemary bushes. But I mean, kind of, you know, and then I was going to have them. How cute, be a little grungy. Of course you can stir. I was already going to do it, honey. I was already going to do it.
But okay. then we can reveal it mid-party. We're going to, by the way, you have all been twisting your drinks around with real sticks from the ground that got chopped up in the lawnmower, but we collected them and put them in your drink. I don't know. I just feel like that could make everyone just break the ice in a really real and incredible way.
Such a very specific thing you want to do. I mean, you know, we'll talk about it.
Tell everybody where they can follow you, because now they need to see pictures of the holiday party too.
Oh, thank you so much. I do appreciate that. And I'll put you like all over it. Come on. And that's Instagram and Twitter. It's at Chris L. Farah. But what else? Oh yeah. You know, I do YouTube recaps. So of course YouTube has my channel, my loves, and I will be talking about 90 Day, and I'll be doing fun recaps, and I will also be doing my pop culture live stream shows on Fridays, following Fridays, where we talk about all the things I'm obsessed with all week long.
I want to thank my great guests, Stephanie and Chris, and remind you to click subscribe, join the Facebook group, Reality Life with Kate Casey. And you can find me on Twitter at Kate Casey. I tweet about shows and during shows all week long. My Instagram is at Kate Casey CA. Send me a DM and tell me what you thought about that Sex and the City movie. You can see what I'm watching all week, and you can see my must watch list as well. That accompanies that new episode on Tuesdays. You can join the Substack newsletter so you can get that in your mailbox every Monday, your inbox, which is great because it's a great guide to what you should be watching all week. You can get that by going to katecasey.substack.com and by listening to that Tuesday episode. And of course, you can't forget about my Patreon with bonus episodes. Go to patreon.com/katecasey. You can hear more about my Meredith interview behind the scenes and some other stuff that's going on in TV and off TV. So check that out. Have a great week, and I look forward to circling back with you on Friday.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. Once Upon a Beat.